Hello, welcome to another episode of the most magnificent podcast possibly ever made by man. This is Risking Failure, where my good friend Mick Dunn and I have an honest conversation about wherever we're growing at this particular period of time, so the rest of the planet can listen in, feel like they're more sane after hearing our calamity. And I am Mark Dobson. If you haven't tuned in before, I'm in Australia. On the other side of the world is my great long-term friend, my lifetime friend, Mick Dunn. Mate, welcome to the most magnificent podcast ever made by man.
Thank you, mate. And congratulations to everybody for listening.
Yes, you are part of the most magnificent audience to ever listen to a podcast. Hey, the relationship episodes have gone out and
they have.
There was another one. Okay, so the way it works, folks, if you're just tuning in, these are recorded almost 2 weeks in advance. So the relationships one went out. We released the other one, another one last week. I can't remember what it was about, something about just life. And I've got feedback from that relationship one straight away.
Stretched thin, yeah.
As a matter of fact, Alana contacted us and wrote me this huge email about her how she thinks through relationships. She's halfway through the podcast. And she was explaining that she had this great model. She said, I've just worked out that everything's a story in your head. And what I've got to say to my partner is, as soon as you get frustrated, she goes, okay, so I've got this story in my head. And the story is all the things that she's worried about and that she's inventing he's doing, all that's happening. And she said, that way it's sort of like, it's not me and it's not him. It's a story that's going on in my head and we've just got to clarify if the story's happening or not. And she said,
that's awesome.
It's so cool, right? And then she said, and also he's then got the opportunity to say, hey, I feel like there's a bit of a story going on for you right now. And he can say, that way he can bring up that he feels like she's not either being present or she's overanalyzing something or she's worried. That's pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, I like that. It's funny because when I was doing the episode, I was like giving that title because I can't even remember if we like started it that the idea was going to be that the focus on relationships is going to be the stories we tell ourselves. That's what I titled it. And I actually listened to the whole thing before I launched it. I don't always do that, but on this one, I felt like I needed to because it was such a broad and big topic that I found this with vulnerability as well. I found it with loneliness. Like it was so intense to keep my brain engaged the whole time, not because of anything to do with like boredom or anything. It was like it was difficult to like continually stay on target and figure out where to go with stuff. So I felt like I needed to listen back, but that's interesting because just the title, I was like, oh, is this even relevant? Like, was that what we talked about in the end? Even after listening for an hour. But I hope everybody enjoyed that. And by this time, you would have listened to part two, which, of course, was with Dobbo, Jess, and Pete. And, mate, I thought that was great. It was really good. What I liked the best out of that, actually, there was a moment in there where you had actually said something that was just sort of about taking responsibility. If you're listening back, it was somewhere about an hour and a half in, and you had essentially said, like, I'm going to take responsibility for my role in this relationship, and you can do whatever you want or whatever you need to do, but you just need to be prepared for the fact that that may hurt me, and you need to take responsibility for your side of things too. I don't know if that make like I didn't say it as crystally clear, and I don't think you did at the time, but a little bit of a penny drop there that I thought was rather important, that like that taking responsibility for our own side of a relationship and not like casting that on somebody else for them to do that. To make the right move or to make it better or to make it right or God, so much of what we do is just waiting for somebody else to take action and make it better.
Yeah, like what I was saying, if those people didn't listen to that episode, was that if I'm going to take responsibility for my role in the relationship, and I'm not asking you to be anything else, but be aware you can be whoever you want to be, but there might be times that impacts me, and I'll let you know how that impacts me, but
But I'm not asking you to change, but just know this is what's happening. And then you can choose who you want to be in response to that. But it's not a level of manipulation or guilt or like, oh, that really hurts me. Is that what you want to do? But it was really the more I could be honest and go, this is what I'm doing with my life and not seek for you to be the solution to it. It's so big, man. It's so big. After we all hung out with Jess and Pete, Jess said, I want to do more of this stuff on relationships for people. And I was like, well, you don't have to go build your own platform. Just keep coming on our show. So that may happen. No,
it's not hard to continue with that topic. I mean, we've already done so. You know, it just keeps going. But, hey, I had an interesting experience actually yesterday. I had somebody reach out to me for the first time through my podcast to pitch their book to me, which is rather interesting. So they've just written a book and they sent it and said, will I read it? And I think their end outcome was to have me interview them. But it was rather interesting, right? I mean, doing something like this kind of project and all of a sudden complete strangers start contacting you.
Was that for the Risk and Failure podcast or for the sustainability?
For Sustainercast. Sustainercast.
Yeah, I figured it would be because, you know, like, you know, you're more cool than Risking Failure.
Oh, come on. Don't get down on yourself now, Dobbo.
No, it's cool. We risk failure and we did. We don't have any.
And we lost. Yeah. Nothing to risk anymore.
Nothing to risk. Yeah, look, that's awesome, Mick, that you've had that already. Somebody's gone, oh, look, he's got my community and I want him, you know, to be introduced to it. And I found the other thing that happened for me when I got my webpage up and going and it was all organized, a few people looked at it. I just posted on Facebook. That's really all I did. Said, oh, the webpage is finally updated. And people got in touch immediately and just said, hey, love to interview you for this and this and this. I'm like, oh, my God, it just came out of nowhere. So it is... yeah, it's an interesting medium, this podcast thing. People need people on their show, but people also need to be on the show. It's great. It's good stuff.
Yeah, for sure. I agree.
Hey, I got an idea for discussion topic today. Anxiety.
Go for it.
And I will start this conversation by saying there is a chance that this conversation will never go to air because my anxiety is too high.
Well, we did talk about this topic beforehand. We had a different topic and then we sort of segued into this instead. I've actually wanted to talk about this one for a long time, but here we are because I think this is the biggest one out of anything I have, quite truthfully.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is it? Okay, so let's hang on. Let's get the nuts and bolts of this so we can get some juicy stuff going. Like, first off, you know, all the psychologists and counselors, there's probably some parameters around this that are, you know, there's probably some line about what you're allowed to talk about. We don't know where that line is. We're just talking about our own personal anxiety and maybe it'll help for other people. But you off air gave us or gave me an indication of where you consistently feel anxiety. And I thought your model of it was a very human thing. And then I started to realize where I feel anxiety. So the anxiety we're talking about is just like human emotion, like sadness and frustration, whatever. It's not off the chart, like I can't function in life. It's like this dormant fear. So do you want to explain what your model was?
Yeah. I pretty shortly stated, I just sort of feel like I'm constantly waiting for something wrong to happen. Not wrong, like something bad, and I don't mean an accident. I don't mean like emergency type stuff. I just mean I'm just waiting. Like every time my phone rings, I just feel like I'm waiting for somebody. Like somebody's calling me to tell me, "Oh, we just like found out we, you know, you can't do this. You got to do that instead." And all of a sudden, I've got to drop everything I'm doing and just rearrange. I don't know. Like today, I had a little thing where we just on a project and I talked to an engineer and I got this like feeling from the engineer that, oh, they're going to make us do this different thing. And we've already done a whole bunch of this thing anyway already. And we're going to have to change it all. And now it's going to cost money. And like, this is going to be potentially a big deal or a big problem. How big of a problem is this? Can I handle it? You know, just brain starts taking off and I'm in like this kind of mode of, like my brain is just exploding into all these different directions of figuring out like all of the outcomes and how can I contain them as quickly as possible and as best as possible so that nothing gets out of hand. And I sort of feel like I, you know, maybe it's because I've just been in the world of project management for so long. Like I'm just waiting for somebody to call me and say that they don't have what they've said they were going to have, or they did it wrong, or it's going to cost more money, or it's behind schedule.
Because you're in charge, right? Like when I used to have a business that had much more mechanics to it, many more pieces, I had that same sort of fear. And I still have that feeling every time my phone rings, I have an association that, what do they need? What's gone wrong? What's the crisis? And because you're in charge, there's so many components that if something goes wrong, somebody cracks a pipe or they go, we ordered the wrong stuff, or it's not going to get here for 3 weeks, it's still in shipping containers, stuck in customs or something, they call you and you're meant to be the, you're meant to navigate the solution. So it's not like they're all, and we forget the conversations where they call up and go, hey, everything's going great to plan. Like, you know,
I've had less anxiety since I've, around that than since I started my own company, because I feel like I get to choose what's important and what's not. I get to choose what I want to stress over, which sounds stupid, but I used to, my head, I just do myself inside out worrying about other people's problems when I was working for people, because like they didn't care enough and I did, and I was really worried that like a decision I just made or something I failed to do could potentially put the company into financial burden and make it go bankrupt, you know, because I've just discovered a problem on a project that could be hundreds of thousands of dollars, and I have no idea whether or not the company can handle that if I'm accurate, you know what I mean? Whereas if it's my own company, I understand what all of those risks mean immediately. I understand what I can handle and what I can't. So like there's a comfort in that, because I can decide whether or not it's truly a difficult thing or not. But that's been hard to manage on the home front for a lot of time when I was starting to grow my company, because I was constantly in a state of the word anxiety is a strong word. I get that, but just constantly worried, even on a weekend, that what's gone wrong? Like, is there any issues? Are there any emails out there that I should be aware of right now? Or, you know, did I forget to get back to somebody on something really important?
So, have I dropped the ball somewhere? Is it my fault?
I think that's pretty accurate. And that's got to be common for a lot of people. And sometimes it's so much that way that it can be paralyzing, because you don't take any time out for yourself. You're just constantly worrying about what you haven't done for other people. And then so you can't truly show up for the people you want to. But so I've seen that in my own family life. And I, way back, almost a year ago now, when we were kind of doing these sort of tests around productivity, and when I went through a period of just working half days, like that's when I saw this kind of stuff show up, because I could see how that felt to like not be in the office a Tuesday at 10:30, but be in the library reading with my kids, like, and being human about that and just understanding that it wasn't comfortable and that's okay. Like I felt like I needed to get out and check email or check if anything has happened. And that's not necessarily what I want, but it's just a very normal thing to feel and be a little bit anxious about.
I remember being on a program in the States, and I was leading it. We took 40 inner city African American kids onto a Navajo Indian reservation. And
That sounds pretty straightforward.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy, actually. So there's more detail to it, which I won't probably expanding too much on air. But it was financed by a family that was saying, we really want to get these kids that have come from inner city Philadelphia and get them through high school and into university, because they came from some really rough backgrounds. And part of that was to create a cultural experience where they could just develop their awareness of a bigger world and all sorts of things. So we took these kids on this reservation, and I was with a few different people who didn't have the same level of experience with kids as me. And these kids were like 15 years old or so, 16 years old, and a bit of a rough crew. Anyway, one night, it's like 2 a.m. in the morning. I'm trying to get everyone to sleep. These kids, we're at a camping ground, and these kids aren't going to sleep. And I'm hanging out with this guy who's an ex-60 Minutes journalist, and we're in the same tent together. And he was writing a piece about this. And eventually, I get in the bed. I can hear the kids running around. And he said, Dobbo, at some point, you have to let go of what's going on there. Like, there comes a point where you've gone beyond the duty of care. Like, you're going to have to get some sleep. And I'm like, yeah, but I can hear these kids going around. I don't trust, doesn't feel right. And in the end, he talked me just to stay in bed, go to sleep, Dobson. At some point, you know, just give these kids the freedom, et cetera, or whatever. Just don't get caught up in it. I wake up in the morning, I come out, and there's 3 police cars. And these kids, in the middle of the night, have run off and got himself involved with some serious sexual activities with another school that is from a completely different demographic and is hitting the fan. And I just looked at this guy and said, I bloody told you. And it was one of those things where there's a time when it's anxiety and it's unhealthy and we need to let go and just go, hang on, that's just an unnecessary angst. And there's another time where it's a level of intuition which says, no, there is a risk here that you need to pay attention to. And I think part of this battle is navigating the two of those.
I agree, but if I was in your position, I don't feel like I would be any different. Part of me is sort of like, I get the whole, like, you have to sleep at some point. But for me, it's like, I know this is pathetically stupid, but I'm thinking about, like, the lawsuit.
Yeah, I'm thinking about I'll sleep next week, right? Like, I'll sleep next week rather than not, if I sleep now, I'll never sleep again.
This, like, it's not this fear of being sued. It's more that it's like hearing this statement of like, and while all of this was going on, you know, Mr. Witness, like, what was your supervisor doing? Like, oh, he was asleep. And, you know, like, you didn't get to hear that he was awake for 12 hours straight, you know, but past his bedtime to like, and just couldn't hold on any longer.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
that doesn't make it in there. It's just, no, he was sleeping. So therefore he failed his duty of care, even though he had extended well beyond it at the point in time when he went to sleep. That's the kind of stuff, you know,
yeah, exactly. And so
situationally, people don't, you know, when they look in hindsight, nobody sees that.
And I just was wanting to meet responsibilities. And as far as I was concerned, until everybody was safe and sound and pulling their head in and being in the right place, then wasn't done. And I was learning the parameters of how far my responsibility extended. And I think that with some of this anxiety stuff, in your example, and probably mine, which we'll get to in a second, is that we're trying to work out it. How far does my responsibility extend? And it's interesting when you talk to Cam, who we had on a long time ago, and he, you know, gone down an unhealthy track with drug and alcohol. He says that a lot of what he was hitting those substances for, the reasons that were motivating it, is because he had extended too far his sense of what was his responsibility. And now he's one of these, it's quite remarkable how clear he is about what's his responsibility and what's your responsibility. And you know, your responsibility is not, your happiness is not his responsibility. I mean, if you're going to make a good decision or a bad decision, that's not his responsibility. And, you know, you can help a little bit and you can talk about it, but at the end of the day, you know, if someone makes a bad decision, it's not your fault. And it sounds really callous until someone's been burnt out and taking too much responsibility for the people around them, eventually being burnt out and comes back down to, no, this is my responsibility. And I see lots of friends through the years get burnt out because they're taking on too much. They're wanting to be this for this person and this for this person and this for this person. And it just ends up they just get burnt out until they can't do anything for anyone. And then they start to realize, actually, the world's running fine without me. But then you can get onto self-esteem issues there, and you need to do the work. You need to really think it through, and why am I wanting to be that for that person? And So look, with my example, with the anxiety, I think it's more like angst, isn't it, than anxiety? I think anxiety fits into that depression topic you know I really talk about, but with angst and feeling anxious.
It's interesting because I guess I didn't identify it that way, but that's okay. I get what you mean now that you've said it, but maybe that's just maybe. Yeah. Anyway.
Mm. Yeah. So
for angst, I would agree with.
for me, it's like, I can't, you helped me language it better before off air, so maybe you need to help me, but it was like, I can't be, I feel like I'm stretched thin.
That no, I can't. That was last week's topic. Sorry. Keep going.
It was last week's topic professionally. And now it's personally where it's more social. And it's like, I feel like the world, quite a few people sort of need me, or I'm aware of where they're emotionally at. And I feel like I can't necessarily, just due to the nature of how many conversations you can have in a day, how many text messages you can send in a day, how many people you can be with, be present with, that I feel like I'm just dropping the ball on relationships, because mm-hmm. I just can't get in touch. Like, I just can't. If I'm with one person, I can't speak to the other person, and that other person
Can't be who you want to be to the people that are important to you.
Now, I get this at a spiritual level. At a spiritual level, I just say, be with the person you're with. Everything else will work itself out. It's not your responsibility. I really get that. But sometimes I'll promise someone, I'll call you then. And then something else happens that you can't possibly anticipate. And you can't get that call out later. And then you feel like you've let that person down. Now, on a spiritual level, it's like, well, it all plays out as it's meant to play out. But in a practical level, that person might be disappointed, or may have really put some hope in having that conversation. And you feel like you've let them down. And I can go through periods of time where I feel like I've let down 4 or 5 people at the same time, where I actually haven't had a decent conversation with any of them, haven't touched base with them, not sure where they're at, what do they need something from me, I don't know. And then in the end, everything works out fine. But I'm almost like it when people call me and if they just told me why they're calling me, I'd feel better. You know, when some people was calling,
I used to do that, and you would. When I was living in Australia,
go on, tell me.
I remember I would leave you a message, and it's different; it was business. But I would leave you a message, and I'd tell you what I needed or what I want, and then you would call me back and say, "Don't give me 1-2 minute long voicemails." And I'm like, "Well, why are you calling me? You've called me back and asked me what I needed. I left you everything you needed to know."
Really, I don't remember that. But but you also might have been boring.
Yeah, I was probably being boring, but...
Well, sometimes I think if we actually go use that example, sometimes you have had the tendency to think out loud.
Yeah, I know, I do.
So you'd leave a message going, I'm just thinking what I could do with this, that, and then you go, actually, you know what? I think I've got it. You're like, Mick, if you had just had a little chat with yourself, that probably would
have. We wouldn't have to have this conversation.
We wouldn't have to. So I'm listening to the messages.
I'm guilty as charged on this, but at the same time, it works on both ends. I've had this in the workplace on both sides of the story. I have that weakness. I've identified it for many years, and I try not to shield it. I try to just be completely open about it because I fall into that trap. But then I get people that will be the exact opposite, and they'll get frustrated. And I had this with in the work environment where I went into probably too much detail explaining how we needed to do something. And I was like, yeah, we get it. And then somebody else had an issue with one of the a crew member or whatever that was this person just doesn't do what I want to do. I'm like, well, what'd you ask him to do? And it was a single sentence, and then come back, a few hours later, and it's it's not done the way I wanted it to. I was like, well, it works both ways in that, at the end of the day, these are the kinds of things that's sometimes for me is driven by that angst of if I don't convey what I need to convey in terms of information, if something gets lost, I'm going to be I don't feel comfortable sometimes even just saying hey, Mark, give me a call. If there's something that genuinely needs to be communicated, I'll communicate it because I'm worried that if I don't and you don't get it in time, then something's going to get screwed up. That's what's happening in my brain. It's I may not even know, but I just feel this sense of urgency to just transfer that information so that whoever I'm, if you didn't pick up the phone, I'd expect it to try to connect with you. But in that moment, you weren't there. So I've got to try to tell you what I need so that if I'm in the middle of something else when you call and I can't pick up, that I at least know the ball is moving. Because that's what gets me anxious, is like to just play phone tag of like, call me back, call me back, call me back. And a whole day goes by and there's no progress.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I wonder when people hear this and they've got their own version of anxiety or angst, that they just hear that and just go, yeah, whatever, that's not really a big deal. Because we had this conversation come up recently where a few people in our circle have just been sick or injured or unwell, like, you know, like Dad just had his knee replaced and been in hospital for a bit and he's got to have another one done. And then a few other people have been just, you got zero energy, or they're just, you know, they're sick, or they're just tummy problems or just headaches or just all sorts of stuff, you know. And it's like, it's real for them. So it can't be a competition about who's the sickest. So, you know, when someone's like sprained their ankle and they can't walk properly, someone else says, well, I've got a broken leg. Well, it's real for both of them. So it's not like, oh, yeah, so you should be happy you've only got a sprained ankle. And even when we have this conversation, when you say these things create angst for you, then that's real. And mm-hmm. I know that when I talk about not necessarily being able to be available for people in my life, that that other people will go, well, Mark, you just do this, this, and this. I'm like, well, I think that sometimes we forget the human element, that you're going to experience these emotions and that's the way it's playing out for you. And I had a couple of situations this week where someone said, oh, I contacted so-and-so, they didn't get back to me, and then they made a crazy sort of conclusion. Well, oh, they're probably like this or they're probably like that. And I said, well, hang on, they're a human. So there's a good chance that maybe they've just been diagnosed with an illness, or maybe mm-hmm. Maybe they're just overworked and they just need a break and they're just mentally full. Or maybe they're worried about some sort of like something they're worried sick about. They've got a family member that's sick. Like there's a whole lot of reasons that someone might not be responding how you would think.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to be really forgiving. So, whereas it brings the angst out for you, and I talk about my one, it's still the same emotion regardless of how it's playing out. So, for the injured person, it's still the same sort of like frustration and pain and discomfort. And as soon as we start to get comparing, we're a bit crazy. So, I just heard you saying that, and I wasn't really engaging with the level of angst that you would feel for that, but I know it's real for you because I know you so well.
Yeah, it's like a pretty high level of something I feel like I manage, like they're just minute little things. It's not like I'm like anxious about it. It's just the tiniest little thing. I was like, well, like, I don't know.
Well, I used to hate it when my phone rang, because every time my phone rings, there's someone's got a problem. And so it's great now having an agent, because they call the agent with the problem. But it used to just do my head in. Like, I'm really private with my phone number now, because I just because someone's got a problem, you're having a great day, someone's got a problem, they call you and suddenly it's your problem as well. That just ruined your day. And maybe it wasn't even your problem, or maybe all the negative energy is going to come down the phone and they're like, well, what are we going to do about this and this and this and this? And, you know, well, that person really can't manage the crisis, or they can't even emotionally manage it. So they just blast it at you. So I keep real filters between me and – so when you said, you know, how it plays out, I'm like, that was my experience. I just didn't want to answer my phone anymore. And I just didn't. And I don't. I just don't. The other one was with Mel and I. We got a fun little model that we used. One time I didn't know she was bad, you know, just in a bad patch. She got hit by about three different really challenging things at the same time. And we had a massive chat about it, about just support and understanding how that works. And so now we've got this model where if someone's it's out of 10, and I'll just text her, I go, how are you out of 10? And her and I have sort of got this rule that four and below is an intervention, where you got to tell the truth. And if someone's a four having a bad patch, the other person just calls, whatever, drops in, whatever you got to do, just because a four is not healthy. And so we'll text and we're like seven, and she's like five, and you're like, great. And you just got a sense of where they're at, and it's okay. You don't have to fix it or solve it. You just got a sense of it. And it's been really good. It's almost like if somebody contacts you with a problem, you go, all right, how big is the problem out of 10? And they go, it's a 9. You're like, okay, anything 8 and above is a panic. And that helped because, you know, we said before about the conversation, if somebody's called me and said, they told me what they needed or they wanted, then I'd know. But that's not always practical because sometimes you don't know. You only feel better after you've just spent time with someone. You just, and people don't go, oh, I just wanted, you know, like, and it's not really their issue anyway.
Yeah. I mean, nobody's perfect. So I always feel like, you know, there's opportunities to communicate better all the time. But I do try to, like, if somebody doesn't need to respond to something, I do try to, like, begin any voicemail message with there's no need to call me back because I don't want them to not hear that. Like, because, you know, when you, like, you leave a message and on the back end of it, it's like, don't worry about calling back. Like, if that all sounds good to you, but they don't hear that. They just hear all of the things and then they feel compelled to call you back and say, yes, that's fine. And that's been helpful because then it just, I know that if I don't hear from them, everything's cool. And that's been kind of useful because I feel like I'm at least doing them a favor by starting with, as soon as they hear that, they know, well, this can't be too important. It's just confirming what we've already discussed.
I feel like this all revolves around negative energy though, because I know through the years when I've just listened to kids and their stories, then they're anxious because they're not sure what mood dad's going to come home in, or they're not sure what mood their brother is going to come home in, you know, or their mum. And you're
or somebody at school or their teacher or their best friend.
Yeah, like you go to girl might go to school and say, I wonder who's talking about me today, or who is the group talking about, who's been excluded. Mm-hmm. And I know the boys can go to parties and just go, they've got no agenda with no conflict with anyone, but there's somebody at that party just wants to fight them. And you've got an idea in your head, I'm going to fight that guy. And
I remember, like, I used to hate going to nightclubs because I just felt anxious that it just felt like this anxiety of you're supposed to be something or somebody or whatever, that it was like it wasn't okay to just sit there. It wasn't like you just had to, like, it was like this game, and I was like, I just wasn't interested in playing it. So whenever I'd be at a nightclub, I was like, I hate this, I just want to, like, go. But sometimes I'd be totally fine with being there because I was, like, in the right zone, or mostly just with the right people that had the right attitude. You know, when I think of being in a nightclub, you know, the best times I've probably had of being probably at, I don't know, an 80s nightclub where everybody's just like, oh, this will just be crazy, stupid. And, you know, just everybody's just playing around and just having fun and not trying to
be anything. Yeah. I wonder if play the room, right? So I feel like, I like what you said then about, is there an expectation for you to be something? So a lot of this angst can come from, I feel like somebody's expecting me to be somebody or have delivered something or to act a certain way. If I can't meet that responsibility, I will have a negative repercussion. So you go to a club and people are going, come on, man, relax, lighten up, get into it, dance, go and talk to that chick. And if you don't necessarily feel like you want to do that or know how to do that, or comfortable doing that, then this angst comes because there's a conflict between what you're doing and what the expectation is. And the same with a project. It's like, call up and go, Mick, that was meant to be done. That mob hasn't got on it. You said the contractor was good. I'm fine. He's a pain in the butt. We got to get this stuff sorted. And there's this, I expected you to be sharp, professional, you know, et cetera. And, like, it's like the model, like, they're expected to look good. And as they get older, they're not as sharp. And there's, like, this anxiety about, oh, do I look okay? Do people still think I'm pretty? Am I still an important person, even though I look like this or I've changed? And I can see it playing out with me. It's like I feel like I have a certain almost role to play in my community as a friend and just as a family member. And as a result, some expectations come with that. And when you can't meet them, you feel like you've let people down, or the fact that someone might be a bit burnt, they can blame you, and it's not really your fault, but they can blame you. And even that person at home that's waiting for mum and dad to come home, and it's a lottery, when, like, they don't know, they're trying to work out, who do I need to be when mum and dad gets home based on their mood, especially those people that have got parents that have got a mental disorder, or they're sort of alcoholic or something, and they can be, or got a substance abuse, they can be a real lottery. And so the kid's in a constant anxiety going, well, who do I need to be today? Who do I need to be to calm this down so I don't receive the negative energy and the potential danger? And I feel like, you know, it's only once you're really burnt out that you're just trying to please people that you go, oh, stuff, it's just not worth it.
I agree, although I will say I feel like over time, and a lot of which has been recently as we've been doing this project too, when I've experimented boundaries on some of these things, an interaction today actually that wasn't even an interaction I was having. I was just sitting in the same space as a group of people that were actually my clients. And one of these people were like the director, like the head guy or whatever in a large corporate organization that's just flown into town for a little bit. And all of a sudden the energy's different. People are flustered. They're all like, oh, everything's got to be just so. Make sure, you know, if you see this guy, we need you to be, you know, making sure everything's, you know, tip top shape and blah, blah, blah. In between the lines, basically, everybody, you know, sort of saying to me, you've got to look as good as possible so that I look as good as possible. And then what I was observing within the room was that he was essentially filtering the same thing down to them, but the guy just wasn't. He was like your typical, like, when's it going to be done? No, that's not a clear answer. I need a clearer answer than that. And no, you need to get on the phone and, you know, I need that in writing from that guy. Like, when's that going to be done? Like, it was just that kind of, these people were just immediately defensive. You could just hear them on the back foot constantly. Well, you know, he's given it to it. Why doesn't he have it to us now? Like, and I've lived that enough to know that feeling of like just feeling defensive about somebody you're working with, you know, if we just use that example for right now. And I did recognize in that moment as I was listening to this that I've gotten to a point at least where I don't respect that a whole lot anymore.
That leadership style?
Oh, I mean, definitely not, no. Mm. But even like when I'm in it, I don't feel as emotionally charged to drop everything. I mean, I may still do it, but I won't do it with the same – I won't do it with anxiety.
Yeah. Because you're smarter than the game now. Like when he's been like that, you go – yeah, you want A, B, and C, I'll get them to you, but don't think your gruff nature and this power thing's going to get me out of bed, especially because you own your own business. You've got some liberties. You're like, you know what? I don't need this. I'm just going to go work for another client that, you know, with these employees, though, they fear it. Like, I could lose my job. I could lose my house. I could not be important. Where you've positioned yourself where you're like, well, because I'm the same. When someone speaks to me, like I was in a meeting recently and the woman said she just came in and just trying to assert her importance. And she called the meeting. We get in there and she goes, well, I've only got 20 minutes. So let's get this done. And I said, yeah, well, I've only got 15.
You did?
Yeah. So she called me and I'm the consultant and she was just trying to make out she's more important than me. I've only got 20 minutes. I said, well, I've only got 15. So we have to get done quicker than that.
What did she say to that?
She just couldn't believe it. She just looked at me. And I said, I'm not joking. So if that's all the time we've got, then let's just do it right now. And she was pretty speechless because no one ever spoke to her. I could just see her just, you know, flapping her wings, making lots of noise, dropping her books. I'm important. And I just calm as. I'm like, well, I basically was like, well, I'm more important. You know, and it's not actually, I won't misuse that. I'm not trying to get in an ego battle. I was just actually laughing at her saying, she could see that I was just sort of taking the piss going, look at you. I ain't got 20 minutes. You've only got 20 minutes. You call the meeting, got all these people here and you only got 20 minutes. I was like, well, good on you. How stupid's that? So, and she doesn't work for that company anymore. I don't know where she is, but it was good that she, like, it was just stupid. Like, I don't get caught up in that. Everyone's like, oh, okay. Or quick, she's only got 20 minutes, let's bow to her. And I'm like, well, stupid idiot. She should have allocated more time.
You know, I do feel like that comes back a little bit to what you were talking about with Cam, right? And saying, like, I'm not responsible for your ability to look good in front of your boss. Like, I can't be responsible for that. Yes. All I can do is be responsible for the quality of my relationship to you.
Yes.
And if you're not happy with that, that's okay. As long as I know I'm doing everything I can, then I'm okay. But if you're just constantly not happy with that because you're not able to manage your own relationship to others, then there's just a point where this becomes a painful process.
Do you remember when we worked at Interlock and Pam had a sign on her door? Now, Pam was the bursar and she handled wages, and people would constantly run in an emergency going, "Oh, I haven't got any money. Can you forward, can you bring forward my check or something? Or could you change the amount I'm getting this week?" And she had a sign on the door that said, "Lack of planning on your part does not constitute a crisis on mine."
Mm-hmm.
And it basically,
I don't remember,
but you can see the merit in it because she's like, "Well, you're the one that's life's a mess. You haven't got your finances sorted out. Don't come in here in a panic and start going, 'Can I do A, B, and C?' Because I'm just plodding along, getting my job done as I should do it." And that's what I hear you saying, that people come to you in a panic, going, "Oh no, you know, I need this and this and this." And you go, "Well, if you were running your job properly, you would have asked me for that a lot earlier, or you would have been on it, right? It's not my responsibility to come and rescue you right now."
A little bit, but I've seen that statement many times, and I actually find myself, it doesn't rub me the wrong way, but it's like I would never put that on my door, because I feel like in order for me to put that on my door, I need to be not in ever in that state. And I'm always having issues like that. I'm always like, "Oh my God, we've got to get this like quickly. Like we've got half an hour before, like I'm going to have four guys standing around doing nothing. I need to drop everything and rearrange and make phone calls and ask everybody to drop what they're doing just so that we can keep the ball rolling." And I'm always trying to not have that be a state of crisis that somebody else has to carry in their day. Like I'll feel a little guilty sometimes calling whatever, an engineer and saying, "Okay, like I need to figure something out really quickly. I just would really appreciate if you can help me with this so that we can keep everything moving forward."
Yeah, but that's different to that. That's different to working with somebody than having not planned and then hoping the other person can do it. I have that all the time when someone goes, "Oh, Mark, we really stuffed up our budget. Would you mind working for this amount next year?" Yes, I would. That's not my problem.
Yeah, I understand what you mean.
You know, you don't turn up to the movies and they go, "It's $17 and you go, "I've got $5. Sorry." You know, like, so when somebody says, "Oh, my boss needs this yesterday," and you're like, "Well, we've been working together for ages. You should have known your boss wanted that yesterday." So it's either their balls up or your balls up. But you can't expect me to deliver that level of proposal in 24 hours or that information in 24 hours and start getting all stressed. And then I'm at home late at night doing it. And then sometimes you go, yes, that's the nature of the dynamic business where we all, you know, chip in at a certain time. But if we go back to that anxiety discussion, like more specifically, I think anxiety seems to be, in these examples, linked to whether or not you need to be almost defensive. Like if there's something coming in where you're gonna feel bad, and so you don't want to feel bad. And so what we do is we constantly feel bad so that we don't feel bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're trying to block it. And it's a lot like, I'm wondering if anxiety is very much like a subtle version of worry. It's like,
it's experiencing failure in advance.
Or experiencing it in the past, and therefore you've got a memory associated to it. So we've got a changing of the seasons at the moment, and these smells will come in and you'll get this memory of something awesome or something bad. And it's just sounds and smells particularly hold triggers, and places hold triggers. They hold memories and feelings. So that's where I didn't want to answer my phone for a long time, because every time it rang, I'd had it ring before, and that was the sound that preceded crisis. And even today, I was coaching Colby this morning, and in the background, his phone went, and I was like, "Oh, I hate that sound." And I realized why. The sound that was on his phone as a ringtone, I used to use as my alarm clock for waking up in the morning. So when it went, I was like, "Oh, I hate that sound."
Yeah, I think we've all experienced that, right? When you when you've got the new iPhone or whatever, or new phone, and you're like, oh man, I got all these great like alarm clock ringtones. Oh, this is going to be awesome waking up to this like beautiful piano music now. Yes. Morning number three, it's like, F you, phone.
launching Beethoven's Fifth in E major across the room, you know. And so, but I think that's what happens when it's not that we're anticipating the pain. It's sometimes we've had it before and it's triggered. And so the example before, it's dad's come home before and gone ballistic. And so every time his car pulls up in the drive now, that could be the signal that precedes disaster.
Mm.
And that's the warning signal. And you start to get tentative of when's dad going to come home. And I know for me, it was, gee, every time my phone rang, there was a bloody problem. And I had to shift my business and my structures and a few things so that one, I was not getting lumped with other people's problems that were not my responsibility. And two, I had a filtering mechanism. But then I'd start, as we're discussing this, I'm noticing myself still do it socially where I haven't got back to someone for a few days. And I think a lot of my life is I want people to feel important and valued, and they are important and valued. And my family and my friends and people extended just outside of that, and some, you know, random people are getting contact with me through different things, and even like listeners to this, I really value people. So when I'm taking an action that I feel like they're experiencing not being valued, being second, I'm in this conflict. And so I feel like I'm not being who I want to be. But the truth is it's like three or four people all throw you a tennis ball at the same time. And you're like, I might be able to catch two, but I can't catch them all. And then it's like them going, oh, no, if you don't want to play catch with me, that's fine. And you're like, I want to. It all happened at the same time. So I feel like a lot of my angst comes from that, just trying to be present for people.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Socially, family, friends, it comes down to that story that we tell ourselves too, just like what you're saying earlier, of like, because we've had that with friends too, where like you're contacting somebody 5, 6, 7 times, text, phone, email, no response. Are we doing dinner or not? What's going on? Do they hate us? Do they think we're like bugging them? Are we not good friends for them anymore? Like, and then they contact back and say, oh, really sorry, the following thing came up. But then, you know, how you do have friends that you're like, but it's constantly like that. It's always like that. You're always leaving 3 messages to their one reply or whatever, and it takes them 2 weeks to finally remember to reply. That's, you know, some people are just that way, and that, you know, you just get to know who is. And I do believe, like you said, you take that history along and you build that into the story and you understand that this is how it always is. But I wonder though, see, just like you were talking about with Mel earlier on the home front, for example, like Liz and I have said stuff like that, where it's like if I call 2 times in a row, that means you need to, like, you really need to call back. Sometimes there'll be false alarms on on that. And that's okay, but it's okay to, it's like, it's always fine because it's relieving to have not, you know, have called back quickly. And it's really just, I'm just at the post office and I need to know the zip code, but you just know, and it makes it very, it makes it easier when there's just one phone call and a voicemail message that it's okay for me to call you back in 3 hours because I know it's not pressing and urgent. So I almost wonder like whether... I don't know that we can do that as cleanly in our professional lives, but certainly on the home front and with friends and family, we can at least say, you know, like you need to be responsible for what we're connecting on. Like you need to tell me when I really need to call you back. You don't have to tell me I've got a crisis, but make sure you let me know when it's really important for me to call you back, because I won't know, or at least, I don't know, maybe you just sense that anyway. I certainly don't. I wouldn't know, and it's really important that I call somebody back unless they just outright tell me there's a problem.
Mm. I think you can do it anywhere where there's repetition, like, because Mel and I had you know, when we invented that number thing, it hit the fan and I hadn't been there for Mel enough, but I hadn't didn't know. And we realized that we just weren't communicating well. And we put that number in place. It's just been like the best ever. Like, I'm not anal about it, but sometimes we'll just touch base with someone because we're worried about them. We haven't spoken for a bit. And I'll go, well, hey, what number are you? And they'll come back a 7. You're like, great. Because if you're a 4 and you weren't telling me, you know, I know my job's almost to ask, but your job is to tell me. But sometimes you're not positioned to volunteer it. So anytime there's something repetitive, I feel like you can do that. Like with Joanne and I, my sister, and she invented this rule. It's great. You know, when you're calling each other and you call someone, it drops out. And then you both try to call each other back. And then you go, you keep getting engaged signals. Well, you know, Joe said, Mark, whoever makes the phone call, if it drops out, that person has to ring again. So you just got this little understanding and it works really well because whoever rings just knows it's their job to call again. So it's a repetition. But you're always going to be faced with areas where it's a new problem. It's a growth problem. We haven't been here before. And off the back of that, I've got a question for you. Maybe you can tell me what you think of this. In your family, in your life, the 4 most important people live in the same house as you, okay? Your wife and your 3 kids. And when you come home, they're there and you can just be around. In my life, the 4 or 5 most important people in my life don't live in my house. And because they don't live in my house, it feels like they're all separate communications. I don't just come home and we're all in the same space. And I wonder if that's part of feeling stretched. Then again, in reverse, I know that someone like you with a family, you come home and your friends and, you know, your family are always there, and that sometimes means you don't have the opportunity to necessarily make the calls or spend time with someone else. But I wonder sometimes when I get like stretched, socially stretched, and this will suck for some people because they're going, well, hang on, it's all right for you, you're socially stretched, like I've got no friends. It's not like that. It's not like there's like 1,000 people out there. It's just sometimes everybody's trying to get in touch at the same time. I wonder if just not having everybody living under the same roof, the most important people in my world, is a fundamental part of the problem, meaning that I just can't tick off 4 people in one go, if you like.
That, I think, is a pretty big difference, right? Mm. Because I do kind of feel like when I'm at home, all I have to do is focus on being at home. And that might sound easy, but that's half the problem and half the challenge is to be truly at home. But in saying that, if I can achieve that, I must admit I'm never thinking that in any moment I'm going to get interrupted or that I'm not being there for somebody else. So, and I guess what I'm saying maybe is that there's a built-in thing in that because some of my own friends, if I contact them, say at Saturday at 2 o'clock, I don't expect to hear back from them. I don't expect them to pick up the phone, or if they did, if anything, I would be much less presumptuous about them picking up the phone after business hours or on a weekend because I know they're with their kids or their family. And even though it might be family to family, like my assumption is they must be at the park. They must be, doing nap time and they're trying to get the kids, you know, quietened down. Because there's just that understanding to a certain element that's sacred time.
And I don't think that people have that anticipation of somebody that's single. I think
that's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
So they just think
I wouldn't say you're always on the clock, but it's just like you don't have that.
Well, yeah, like, you know, like if I could say, oh, I've been hanging out with, you know, so-and-so and the kids, they're like, yeah, I understand that. But people don't do that. They say the 4 people in your life, you have a connection with, a significant connection. And maybe in your life, you can have like, I don't know, maybe 10 connections. Well, 4 of them are under the one house, all right? Now, in my world, if I go out for dinner with 4 or 5 people, then I feel like I've touched base with all of them. But if I didn't go out with dinner with them, when I come home, they're not there. So now each one's a phone call or each one's a text and there's all this stuff going on. I don't have a disclaimer for not getting in touch, for just taking downtime. And I'll tell you what is interesting, for the want of exposing too much here. it wouldn't be the first time. You know, I think you might have put a bloody expletive on that one. I just dropped the F-bomb, but well, sort of a F-bomb. It was a... Anyway, is what I find really tricky, and single people will be able to relate to this, is when you are single and then you start dating someone, you start to spend time in evenings with that person or on the weekends with that person, and you spend a longer period of time, and people start to notice you not getting in touch and not being as available because they're missing out. They usually would spend some of that time with you. And there's this transition period, and there's always some backlash. There's someone going, look, you know, you haven't been available. You've fallen off the face of the earth. And you just, when you start to invest in, say, a new work project, other things, you know, you drop the ball. But when you start investing in a new relationship, you have to withdraw from some other ones. And, you know, in my friendship-
It puts a lot of pressure on that relationship.
Well, it does. Well, it's not really trying to because you're having a good time in that. It's really putting the other relationships at your ass.
Yeah, I agree. But when you know that's going to happen, then it puts pressure on the relationship that you're trying to move into a little bit because you're like, well, I better be bloody sure about this because I'm going to make some other sacrifices. Not consciously, but subconsciously, I'm sure that- It sounds like you're aware of that. You're aware that if I start spending more time with this person, that means I'm going to spend more time with these other people. And it better be a good fit because, like, if not, then my whole world is going to get difficult.
Well, it does get difficult because you can be invested in this relationship and then for whatever reason it doesn't play out to the next level. And then you contact your old friends and going, hey, what's going on? And they kind of get a little bit like... Well, it's all right for you to get in touch now. Where have you been? And once again, it's not necessarily that understanding that it's no one's fault. It's just the nature of it. If you're close to five people and you start to introduce a new person, they're going to have quite a bit more of your time. Then everyone else's time reduces. It has to. And and I've noticed it before. And I've said when I'm dating, some people said, oh, we're just about to hit that transition point where some of our friends might get upset. And it's not like they're childish friends or anything or childish things. It's just the nature of people going, hey, I haven't heard from you. Where have you been? And it feels crap where you don't want to not value them, but you're in a transition. You're changing. But I wonder if sometimes some of the angst that I've got socially is just because, you know, then your friends aren't all under the same roof. And if you're in my place, we'll have a barbecue on Sunday nights through the summer often and a whole lot of people will rock up. And it's great because you feel like you saw everyone. But if you're not doing that and if those people aren't there, then you still got to touch base with them. And that sounds terrible. It's not like it's a chore. It's just, that's where my angst comes from. Like, oh, who have I dropped the ball? And then someone will say, hey, you know, I haven't heard from you for ages. And you're like, well, I just not possible. Or also sometimes you don't want to contact them because you need to mentally invest and emotionally invest somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And that's where my angst comes from. I find it exhausting.
But you've always been a connector of people. Like, you've always been a central point kind of person. Like, I don't know. That was the first thing that struck me with you when I met you, when we first started working on developing the Aspire program. Even though it was a group of six or seven of us, it was all coming together from you. So, you were the connection point. And as the more that grew, like that community, which spanned hundreds of people, all of those people filter back to you at some level. But then there's leaders within all of that, connectors that connect little subcultures of that community. And so those people likely feel that similar pressure, but not all of us do, because I don't feel like I can remember a time where I was ever anxious about the fact that everybody's contacting me and they need something from me emotionally and logistically, and I can't manage it all.
You haven't had that experience. You haven't had that feeling.
No, I don't think I don't feel that same. And I don't know, just like you said earlier on what I was talking about, I can understand it. I can empathize with it, but I don't live that every day. I don't experience that every day. I might experience similar stuff in terms of managing work and home life, and managing time at home and figuring out how to keep everything in balance but I think that's entirely different to what you're talking about.
Yeah, because like I'll get emails from people saying, hey, I'd love to have a coffee, or could you help me with this? And they dump their problems and or their questions. And I don't mean that like, oh, they dump their problems. Like it's nice, right? It's humbling. Like, yeah, and you help where you can. But sometimes when I'm emailing these people back, I don't know that, or even I'm saying, yeah, all right, I'll talk to you on the phone. And I can sound a bit callous sometimes, like, oh, listen, I'll give you a 20-minute phone call. They can, I don't know that people necessarily realize that that's a conversation I'm not having with somebody else. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And not trying to be a hero.
You said this a lot of times while we've been trying to connect on the podcast, like before we're recording, I've heard it more than 15 times in this project where you've been like, I just need people to stop calling me and I just need to like, I just need to like shut off my phone for a day and get some goddamn work done. It's like the kind of stuff I keep hearing from you. Where you're like, I just feel like everybody is coming back to me and relying on me to either solve the problem or take the time. And I just don't have time for everybody. So I'm stuck and I'm not doing anything for myself.
Yeah. And it sounds like, you know, from the outside you could go, oh, well, Mark, you know, allocate some time, tell them you're not going to do this. Oh, I fundamentally get all those things because in the, not like I'm doing it sort of thing. Like I've got an idea for it actually next week, but it's just the nature of some people's roles. And there'll be heaps of people out there will have that when they're in a leadership role and nothing moves forward without them. And I actually think that a lot of things do move forward without me.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I blame myself for my capacity to manage. But as we're talking about this, you're probably right. Like I get contacted by just so many random people telling me their stories and, you know, love to hear this or what do you think about that? Or I read your book and it was great, but I've got this question and it's great. Like you want to be that person that's not a complaint at all.
I do think that like you're a connector, you're a connection point for a lot of people. And so I don't feel like I was ever in that position of, put it this way, like networking doesn't feel, I'm fine being in a room. I can move around a room. I can talk to anybody, but I've never been the kind of person that's like could fill a room with 100 people quickly or build a community. And maybe that's not an accurate reflection of anything either. I just mean like even when we were hanging out, you know, when I was living in Australia years ago, like I get that. Like I get that like it seemed quite natural that I would just not intentionally, just I would contact you to find what's up, what's going on, like what are we doing next? And that sounds ridiculous, but it wasn't because I was like waiting for you to lead. It was just sort of like you just tend to do that. And so a lot of people come back to you to figure out, you know, either what's next or to share with you an exciting outcome. And that's, I'm guessing, just as important to you. And sometimes you can't be there. Like you've been there for a little bit of the path to kind of say, here's what I think you should do. And then you don't have the time to like hear how it went to the level that you might want to either.
Yeah, all those things are true. I think that hub thing's right, is that some people are touching base just to go, what's going on? Or how things been and look.
And isn't it interesting how these are the two things I think in both of our lives where it seems absolutely impossible to delegate. Like you can't like put somebody else in that position. Like I constantly imagine like, is there any way I can pass all of this crap on to somebody? Not pass it on to somebody else. I don't mean it like pass on the crap and go, here, you deal with it. I just mean like, sometimes it can be detrimental to my time management and my ability to do what I want to be able to do that I'm like, I've got to move out of this. Whatever it is that this is not what I'm built for. So I need to like move to something else and have somebody fill that role. But that as much as I try to imagine that, it's like, that's just seems impossible.
Yeah. I think it is it's human connection. You just can't delegate human connection. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yet when we were talking earlier, you were, before we started recording, you were just talking about a few plans that you have for next week, some goals you're trying to hit.
Mm.
And I think it's interesting how I've got similar things. I've got a couple of three or four big things I want to achieve next week, or just like meetings I want to attend, whatever it might be. And you imagine that whole calendar playing out, but there's never a point in that whole thing where you're thinking you're going to get inundated with phone calls from people, or that there's a problem that's going to come up. Like, you obviously can't anticipate any of that. And so it becomes really frustrating when all of that stuff comes up and you actually make no forward progress except helping other people with their agenda.
And look, I'm, you know, my life's pretty cruisy compared to a lot of people, like, in that, you know, I don't have a boss or an entity that, you know, I have heaps of people. I don't have people working for me. So a lot of these phone calls, they're like, my ones are probably more about connections than, you know, yours might be your example about the angst is a bit more about logistics and mechanical challenges. Where mine,
yeah, but I think they're both, the commonality is they're both letting other people down.
They are. My one's more about connection. Like, did you need me, or did you want something from me, or there's something I can be that would make your life a little easier right now? Or and don't get me wrong, with friendships, it's like, well, I want to touch base with them as well. But you go through patches where you really want to touch base, and other times when you just, your head's somewhere else. And but yeah, they both come down to letting people down. But like, is that what anxiety or angst is for the rest of the population, do you think? Do you think at a fundamental level, they're just scared they're going to let someone down, and then it's because they're going to let someone down, they're going to feel bad, and not even necessarily feel like a bad person, but feel uncomfortable and unpleasant, and we're just on guard to.
Mm-hmm. I think it could be pretty closely tied to worry.
So I'm thinking angst is a type of worry. It's a, it's almost like not a mental worry. It's more like a energy worry. Like, intellectually, you know, I don't have to mentally think about this, but senses are.
We're not talking about this psychologically, meaning like, I know there's textbook definitions for all this. I think all we're doing is circulating around trying to define a feeling, right? I mean, because there's a clear difference with that, but there's a consistency to it. I agree.
It is. This is a subtle kind of worry. This is because I remember as a kid, kid 20 or something, driving my car, and I was really worried about something. I was going sick about it, and I was like, Mark, you know what? Worry at 4 o'clock this afternoon about it. Don't just allocate time to worry, because right now you've got to focus on some other stuff. And I really started to condition myself to allocate a time to worry. And if I could allocate a time to worry, then it really mustn't have been that big a problem. You know, like, it was just. And so I tend to not worry, like, I definitely don't worry like I used to. But there can be that underlying feeling like, I'm not meeting my responsibilities. I'm letting people down. And
yeah, I know what you mean. I remember that, the sunscreen song.
Worry is about as effective as solving an algebra problem chewing bubblegum or something. Yeah.
Yeah, right. And the real problems are apt to be the kind that blindside you on some 4 p.m. on some idle Tuesday. Like, I feel like the bubblegum thing, I get that bit, but that doesn't mean I don't worry about the blindsiding one that comes. Like, it's that anticipation. Sometimes I feel like I get caught up in living in anticipation of something.
Yes. And it's so not being in the present. I had this conversation with Mel yesterday. Like, we're so worried anticipating the next thing, especially as an adult. We've got a different sense of time. As a kid, you're like, it just feels like indefinite. Yeah, we're just going to be at this party forever. Whereas as an adult, you're in the party, and then towards the end of the party, you're looking at your watch going, oh, what time should we get out of here? And then what have I got on tomorrow? And we start to, and we're not fully present, because we're always thinking that our life is ahead of us or behind us, not just being fully present. And I feel like there's sometimes in my life when I'm great at being fully present, but it's like, you know, you do a great job running a meeting or running a project, and then you get a computer and you find this email's banged up. And I feel like that's what happened the last couple of days, is I just got fully immersed in a project. And then as a result, there's all these people wanting to touch base. And that's not really fair too. That's not really fair to them, like, because they're just getting in touch. It's not a big deal. They've got no idea that I'm stressed out of my head with how many people I've got to touch base with. And I would never want these people to go, oh my God, it's, you know, these people don't want to be a chore, and they're not a chore. It's the not wanting to let them down, because I value them more than other things. But then, yeah.
But it is that anticipation.
It is.
Yeah, I feel like I definitely identify with that. Yet I go through patches of that. I haven't figured this out yet, but there's definitely like I can almost go entire weeks where I just feel good. I just feel like I don't feel like things are all balanced and under control. I just feel like everything's okay.
Why?
And then there's other times where it's just like I feel like I'm walking on eggshells all week and nothing more significant or less significant can happen in that week. I think I've said on the podcast before, you could take a catastrophe, a stressful situation, and even though it feels highly stressful, in hindsight, there's really no scale to that. You really can't, I don't think, like when you look back on any of these stressful situations, they all just blend together. They're the same feeling. You know, unless you're talking like loss of life and you know, really catastrophic stuff. I heard Brene Brown talking about a story that she had had accidentally replying. She got a really critical email.
Oh, yeah, I heard this. And she
was like a shaming email that she felt a high degree of shame from it. And then she was forwarding it to her husband and accidentally hit reply and like said exactly what was on her mind and just went into a chaotic moment of like, oh, my God. And so with all of this that we've been talking about, I've been aware of this kind of concept of shame too and like the it's a shame trigger that we're trying to manage not happening. And you know, if you haven't listened to Brene Brown's work, I think that's a whole nother conversation that I don't even feel like we're qualified to talk about. But you're trying to avoid feeling a shameful experience. And it's sort of like the fight or flight or freeze sort of syndrome. Like that's the kinds of things that would drive one of those three primal fears or characteristics. Because that's what happens, right? Is like when something really bad happens, you go into those modes of fight, flight, or freeze. And that was what she was talking about within shame. Here's the thing though, that she was talking about, she was saying like the antidote to shame was empathy. That was the only way to, you could still experience shame, but the only antidote to move beyond those three responses was to respond to shame with a feeling of empathy. I don't quite know how that helps in relation to anxiety, but it's like almost like I feel like sometimes this anxiety or angst or worry is experiencing that shame in advance because you're sure something's right around the bend. Which seems rather, and that's what sometimes it's this self-propagating thing because it feels ridiculously stupid to be doing that. Yet here you are again doing it all over again. You're anticipating a problem before it's even happened. Shame on you.
Yeah, you shouldn't, you know. And you're like, oh, now I'm making two mistakes. So next week, I think I want to just go off the grid. I need to get some stuff done. But I feel like, you know, when you go on work and you put an automatic responder, you know, I won't be contacting any, you know, responding emails. Well, I think that...
I think you're going to feel shit when you come back.
That's the spirit. Why?
I don't know. It sounds as though what you were saying was that you feel a need to, like, a genuine desire to be connected to all of that, and that if you don't, you're gonna feel like you're shutting everybody out, won't you? Or
no, I just feel like if I go off the grid, I can just focus and get a few things done that I'll feel better about having them done because they're just taking too long to move into action. And it's tricky though because really what matters is people, but sometimes, sometimes if my family gets in touch, whatever, like that's fine. Different. It's the whole like dumbass other logistics where it takes you 20 minutes to get that thing off to them and then they call you again halfway through. And especially as a writer, which I need to write and create next week, I can't be interrupted by that. Once you dive into it, you just need to write. And it takes you a while to get in that headspace. And when you're in it, you don't want to come out of it. It's like a meditation. You get in and so sometimes I'm not being productive because I'm not having the space from this stuff. And I've got people to handle a lot of stuff for me, but still.
So you could just say, like, to those people that are both are important or that you have high level of communication with, that you, like, would you pre-schedule this and say, hey, everybody, on Wednesday I'm having a retreat, like, I'm on a retreat and I'll be uncontactable, and then have a voicemail on Wednesday that says, I'm on retreat, like, I'll call you back tomorrow if it's urgent, please text me or please do the following thing.
Yeah, maybe, but it never reaches it doesn't reach the people that, you know, like, you say that to the 10 people and then the three that you never even wildest dreams thought of are ringing you 10 times.
How are you going to do it? You're just saying you're going to shut off.
I'm just going to launch my computer across the street from the top window, smash my phone off. Because I actually,
turn it off?
Last week I dropped my phone in the toilet accidentally. And people go, how'd you do that? Now, well, I was at the gym. I had to go to the loo. I walk in. It's on my headphones. It slips out of my hand. It's this drink. The headphones nearly catch it and doesn't quite. As a result, I lose 2 days of text messages and phone calls, and I'm only just starting to find out there's some people that go, Mark, I haven't heard from you. And I'm like, well, I didn't even know you got in touch. I don't even know where to go anymore, but I feel like it's
retreat.
I feel like sometimes I'm trying to get on with my life, and in the process of getting on with my life, you know, there's that saying, if you don't have a plan, you end up working for someone else who does. So, I feel like I've got a plan and I just want to execute this damn thing. But the way it's happening right now is the way of number of contacts I get. I was like, I can't execute my plan.
So, you can figure out however you want, but it'd just be interesting to, like, when we connect next week, if you, like, did that and, like, we talk right after it.
Well, I can tell you, sure, but if we connect next week, I'm a farmer for grid.
Interruption.
Yeah, so I'll tell you what.
Are you going to do the whole week?
Well, I don't know. I'm just thinking about it now. Right? But you know, we're talking Thursday today. That sort of stuffed me up a little bit because it's not a crime because that's just the nature of it. But it's like if it was a Friday, my day, then I can, you know, we want to string a couple of days together. So if we talk Friday next week, that would help me out heaps. But it doesn't matter. Like, I can switch it.
For sure. That works for me next week.
Yeah. And so that's where it's just one of those things where I think a lot of it is just about being getting in that creative space. And I think that a lot of guys would have this at work too, because I know some of my clients have this where they go, I just can't get anything done at work. And some of my really, really brilliant clients, they will take 1 day a week and just stay at home, because when they're at home, they can apply themselves to different tasks that require no interruptions.
And that is a consistent, you know, you've heard that before, like, where do you go when you want to get something done? It's not the office, right? But I do think, however, and that does come back a little bit to the whole overwhelm thing. But, you know, yeah, when you do take time out partly for yourself, but you just knock some stuff out, it sounds like you're in a little bit of that right now too, of like just needing to like have focused time where you really get some major progress. And
the anxiety can come from that too, because it's not really fair to blame all these other people, because it can come across like that. Because it's not, these are my favorite people on the planet that I'm dealing with, right? Like, I love them to death. What can happen is if I haven't made enough progress on a couple of projects, and it feels like that actually is building up, then
you can't be present.
I'm like, it's just out of balance. I need to go and disappear for a while, get this done so I can be available again. So, and even, you know, this project I was working on the last couple of days, I just buried myself in it and it felt so good to get it done. But it's still just a drop in the ocean to what I want to get done. And if I look through, if I actually, you know, people might have done this, when I record my time and I see where it's going, I'm like, oh, it's going to people, which is awesome and admirable and amazing. But at some point you know, you've got other aspects of your level of creativity and level of expression that need to be developed as well.
That's challenging, yeah, because there's only one of you.
Yeah, there's only one. So, when we talk about this angst topic, to close off on it, because we've gone on for a while on this one, but it seems to be about a certain level of worry. Like, I've even got it in this conversation. People can probably feel it because I just go, I love talking to you. I love doing this podcast, but I feel like I've got to do some other things today. And if I don't get them done, it's like a tipping point. It comes a point where I'm like, I've seriously dropped the ball on that. It just continues, so...
Yeah.
You know, so
I do know.
And I think that's interesting, is like when with this podcast, it's like we do this, Mick and I do this, not we get a lot out of it, but we also want to help. And then, but it takes us about 4 hours once in the middle of the day for me and in the evening for you, just to get all the stuff done. And I like making that contribution. That's why I feel, Mick, it feels awesome when I've bumped into people and I say, I've been listening to your podcast. And you're like, oh, awesome. Because if I can record this and help, and share to a whole lot of people, yeah, it just makes life, it's awesome. It's value for time. It's bloody awesome, you know? So it means that that's 10 phone calls that we, you know, and emails that we don't have to get. So but, anyway, I'm not sure. This, like I said at the start of this one might never go. I don't know.
I've had this uncanny recent knack of being able to contact people as they're listening to the podcast.
Wow.
So, I've had multiple people now. So, it's rather interesting because I tell everybody, oh, no, I do this for all the listeners. I just have this sense of, I call them all up and they go this. Because they'll be like, you're never going to believe this. I was just listening to your podcast and then you called me. It's like, that's weird. I was like, oh, yeah, I do that for all the listeners. Just checking that you're listening.
Yeah,
so you might be next on the phone tree.
Yeah. I'll
be calling you soon.
Next time someone, if you're listening to this podcast and your phone rings, it could be, you could be the special listener for this month. And if you answer with, I love risking failure, we'll give you $1,000. Okay.
Yeah.
So if you answer with, I love risking failure while you're listening to Risking Failure, if Mick and I call you, that's great.
Dobbo will give you $1,000.
But you also have to register at this number. So I'll put up a grand. If somebody does that, seriously, if they actually be careful, because one of your mates will probably go. Yeah, actually,
I know somebody's going to pick up. It's going to be on a recorded line.
So. Yeah. Okay. All right. So it's just a good idea. We're just joking, kids.
That's it.
All right, mate. It's always a pleasure. It's always a pleasure. I do need to be somewhere else, but
hey, thank you so much for your time today, Mark.
I just feel like a wanker after this one because it sounds like, oh, my time's so important, I'm so stretched. I'm like, but if you talk about anxiety, that's where mine comes in. But I don't feel really great about this episode. I feel like I just walked around with my underwear down for the last hour.
I think there was some gold in here. Not gold. It's not. I don't think we achieved any strategy. Like, I actually feel all we did was talk about this, but. That's actually what it's all about. I think some of the better recent episodes about relationships and loneliness and all of that is just voicing it. Nobody talks about this stuff. Like, when was the last time you ever walked around with people and like, oh, just feeling so much angst because I'm not returning phone calls to my friends or my family, or, you know, I'm just worried that somebody's going to call me with a problem at any minute now. Like, nobody says that. But we're freaking thinking it all the time.
Don't they say it? I say it with my network and you always.
Wow. But yeah, no, within like close circles of friends, I just mean,
yeah.
But I don't think people truly like express just how big of a challenge those things can be.
And the other thing, people forget they're human and they spit out advice. It's crap. They go, oh, don't worry about that. Oh, you're overreacting. Oh, just God. Do this and this and this. And I go, oh, yeah, like it never happens to you, you know?
God, Twitter, as if I've begun to get more involved in that. You just scroll through Twitter and it's nothing but 1 to 2 sentence things from people saying inspiring quotes of like, don't worry about what other people think kind of stuff and be the best you can be. It's like, oh man, you know,
I've started doing in my talks, telling people that you're going to, that do not listened to the quotes that you read on Facebook because I'm like, because who wrote them? Do we know that's right? Do we know that's even a realistic concept? You know, do what you love and the money will follow. Really? Do we know that? Like, really? Because it's way more complicated than that. It's like live every day as if it's your last. You're like, yep. And then you wake up tomorrow and it's not your last. But that also puts a pressure. But and it could be that we go, that puts a pressure on it to, you know, like these things come with pressures if you can, you're not living a day right.
I think that's what you should do on Twitter. Just like go out with quotes. Like you are going to fail epically. It's going to hurt, but you'll get through it.
Yeah, just fail. Don't worry. Go out on the street, look crap. Sleep all day. Lighten the hell up.
All right, mate. Well, this is it for another week. That's a wrap, I think. It's a, been an interesting conversation.
It has. It's been gripping. Well, I don't know. I don't know. If I'll go get some work done, I'll try to go off the grid next week or something and see. I just got, if I hit some targets, I'll probably feel better. But it's like interesting when we talk about this, it's like angst, bloody angst. I really reckon right now it's just productivity. As we're trying to close off this, I'm just thinking about like it's productivity. If I could smash out a dozen tasks, I could talk to people. It's just like I'd just be like, yeah, great, because I've already got the things I'm worried about done. Anyway, whatever. I hate this episode. Let's go.
Good luck, mate.
Thanks, mate. You're special.
See everybody.
Remember you're special, Mick. Remember you're special. Because you are the one beneath my heart.
See ya.
Bye.
You've been listening to Risking Failure. To join the community and access more free content, news and updates, subscribe at riskingfailure.com.